When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Let's talk about some high-profile rookie and prospect starting pitchers, what we've seen so far in 2024, what we believe will happen down the stretch, and also our expectations for future seasons. James Anderson from RotoWire joins me to talk about that and more coming up next on 90 Feet From Home. What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 35 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my newest work, whether it be these podcasts, articles, any stuff you can find that I put out at JoeOrico99. We're doing a special episode today. Got a great guest on. He's one of the more respected prospect slash dynasty analysts in the business. And of course, I think you're probably familiar with his work over at RotoWire. James Anderson, who you can find on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. James, it's great to get back behind the mic with you. We're trying to figure it out. I think it's been about a year and a half since we did a show together, but it's always great talking baseball with you.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I appreciate the invite and looking forward to it.
We're going to go through a bunch of rookie slash prospect pitchers. We did the hitting version last week with Eric Cross, if you guys missed that one. But before we get into it, I do want to just give you a chance, let the people know who are maybe unfamiliar with your work about anything you got coming up.
Really focused on the MLB draft right now. That'll be taking place in a little under 3 weeks. And so excited about that. Going to have a ton of awesome content, both on the podcast and on the website related to the draft, previewing it, but also throwing all the guys into a fully updated version of my top 400 prospect rankings shortly after the draft. And then, you know, another update to the dynasty rankings will probably be in the works not too long after that. Just everything I'm doing, you can find at RealJRAnderson on Twitter, but also, you know, if you're interested in subscribing to RotoWire, I would strongly recommend my rankings. I stand by those, but there's also just so much cool kind of tech stuff that you can use with syncing your leagues to the rankings and seeing which prospects are available. We've got some really good hard hit data up on the site. I'm very active in the Discord for RotoWire subscribers, so I definitely recommend checking that out.
Lots of great stuff at RotoWire, great voices on the podcast, great people putting stuff out there on the website. So definitely be checking it out. Before we get into the action today, just want to give you a quick word from our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also probably the fastest growing app in the industry as well. You pick whether players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game, and you get a chance to win big. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. You pick between 2 and 5 players in the pick'em entries. There's so much great stuff for you guys to check out at Underdog. If you want to use my code Joe99, it'll get you a deposit bonus and access to a special pick once you guys put in your first deposit. James, let's get into it. Let's start talking about some of these rookies. We'll start with the rookies, and then we'll get into the prospects. Luis Gil is the guy I put at the top of the list. There's really a bunch of guys that could qualify for the guy we should talk about first. But Luis Gil, up until the other day, had been just incredible. I mean, he was kind of due for a bit of a stinker, but even with that under his belt, 2.77 ERA, we're looking at a 29% strikeout rate. He is walking too many batters. That's kind of been a problem for him, but it's been an incredible season for Luis Gil, kind of out of the blue. I think some people were maybe kind of expecting it, but I don't think anybody was expecting it to this extent. do you see Heal kind of maintaining this pace for years to come? Can he be an SP1, SP2, or is this maybe a run where we're looking at a really low BABIP, a high strand rate? Is this maybe just a lucky run for Heal, or is this legit in your eyes?
I think the fastball and the slider combo is absolutely legit in terms of racking up strikeouts. He's someone that I even comp to like Spencer Strider back before his, you know, kind of injury, or at least if you were looking for guys with just an elite fastball slider combo who could kind of do that type of thing, he'll always kind of fit into that box. The walks are obviously an issue. But, you know, I think for a guy that has his type of strikeout stuff, it's something that I would largely overlook. I think the biggest issue with Heal is just, you know, how many innings can he handle? Because, you know, I have him on some draft and hold teams. He wasn't even universally drafted in NFBC Draft Champions Leagues. So he was like under the radar enough that you could get him really late. But part of the reason for that was just the innings. He's just not a guy who's really ever built up the workload to the point where we could be really confident in him as a starter. So I think that that's going to be kind of the story over the next couple months with him. You referenced the blow up outing against Baltimore. I think I'm really interested to sort of see how he does tomorrow against the Mets. I think he could easily right the ship and just kind of keep on plugging along, but it's also possible that he's just going to kind of wear down a little bit here over the next few weeks, which I don't think is anything for him to be necessarily ashamed about, just given the fact that he's barely pitched over the past couple of years. But just something I'm following is just kind of how he handles these dog days of summer as his innings start to creep into sort of uncharted territory. But if he can get through this season relatively healthy, you know, maybe finishes around 140 innings, 150 innings, something like that, then I'd be really excited. But I think it is just worth kind of seeing how he does over the next month or two, because this workload is, it's a lot for a guy who throws as hard as he does and who's struggled to stack innings even before his Tommy John surgery.
So from a redraft perspective, you have Heal right now, you're getting offered something pretty decent in return. Are you going to be more inclined to take that just because of those innings concerns?
It's tough because of just how hard it is to find good pitching. It depends on the player. I wouldn't refuse to move him. But I, you know, if there was like a guy that I thought was maybe just a half step down from an upside standpoint that I had a pretty good faith in terms of just someone who's done a full season multiple times before, that would be maybe appealing. And I could see the Yankees even eventually kind of like, cause he's going to get to a point where they aren't going to keep starting him. I don't see them letting him get up to like 170 innings or anything like that this year. So it's something I would consider, but I also don't think you're like being too sneaky with it. Like, I think everyone's kind of aware of the situation, and I don't think anyone's going to necessarily treat him as a guy that's just going to be an SP1 over the rest of the season.
In general, we're talking about guys today, rookies who have done very well. We're going to touch on Paul Skenes, Jared Jones, and them. Are you more inclined, based on what you said, to just hold on to these guys that, in terms of like the innings concerns as a whole? Is that something you don't really worry about so much? I did a show a couple weeks ago with Nick Pollock, and he was saying, like, don't worry about that. Take the production you're getting now. Don't worry about September. Is that kind of what you're thinking along those lines as well?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I think you always have to just be kind of thinking, you know, steps ahead. But I think as long as you're sort of staying on top of, you know, can I add like a Robbie Ray to sort of supplement things? Can I add a Tyler Molly or maybe a Luis Garcia? You know, there's going to be more pitching on the way. So you will be able to kind of plug some holes. And I think, you know, once we get into August, September, you know, once after the trade deadline, some of these offenses are going to be even worse. So you'll be able to do some streaming. So I think for the most part, you want to just kind of ride it out. It's just, it's hard to find full value for someone like a Luis Gil. Maybe, you know, maybe with a Paul Skeens, someone just in redraft, someone just gives you a outlandish offer because of just how fun it is to own Paul Skeens, and you could maybe justify it. But with guys like Luis Gil, Jared Jones, I would assume the market in most cases would just tell you to hold them.
Let's jump to Skeens, because I talked a couple days ago, maybe it was yesterday. I do have so many shows, it's hard to remember when I said something, but I think Paul Skeens were trending towards the conversation of, is he the number one starting pitcher taken in 2025 drafts? Maybe that I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but what's your thought on that? Is that crazy, first off?
I think he will be the number one pitcher as long as he just kind of stays healthy the rest of the season. That's just, it's sort of an unknown. Like, he hasn't, for the most part, hitters haven't seen him multiple times. So it's certainly a new experience for these guys when they're up there against him for the first time, but I do kind of wanted to see how the league, and I mean, he did, I think my favorite player interview of the year was when someone asked him like about players adjusting to him, and he was just like, go ahead and adjust. But, you know, I do kind of just want to see how he looks, you know, over the next couple months. But if Paul Skeens is healthy at the end of the season and he just kind of does what I think most people expect him to do over the rest of the season, I would bet on him being the number one pitcher next year.
I think it'll be pretty close. Like, if Wheeler's healthy, if Tarik Skubal's healthy, I think there might not be a clear consensus, but Skeens is like, he's got a 30% strikeout minus walk rate, nearly 2.14 ERA with great estimators. He's limiting hard contact. Like, people talk about the fastball shape a lot. Is that something that bothers you at all? Or is it just, he throws it hard enough that that's just not a concern?
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing I would just, that's kind of what I want to see in terms of hitters seeing him another time and that type of thing. But I do think for the most part, it's overblown. I think it's kind of, you know, people, we have all this information now. We know all about pitch shape and stuff like that. And so everyone has these tools at their disposal to analyze these guys. But I do think it's for the most part, it's kind of overthinking it with him, just given how good the off-speed stuff is and just how hard he throws. You know, it's not like we have too many guys out there who are just sitting 99, 100 and are getting tagged by hitters left and right because their fastball is too straight. I mean, I think once you get to a certain velocity, that's still very, very important. So I think for the most part, it's an overblown conversation.
Is he considered the consensus SP1 for Dynasty at this point? Is it even a question?
Well, so on my last update, I had Tarik Skubal 1, Yamamoto 2, and Paul Skeens 3, but they were back-to-back-to-back, and that was before Yamamoto's injury. And that was, you know, cut a few of Skeens' starts off of that in terms of the sample for that. But, I think at this point, just given that Skubal's hasn't been just completely unhittable over his last month or so, and then, you know, Yamamoto being banged up, I think for the most part people would have Skeens number one for Dynasty.
I think that's totally fair. I think he's just incredible. I hope that we're able to see him stay healthy. That's the main thing here with Skeens. Let's talk about his teammate Jared Jones, who started off just, you know, people were putting Cy Young bets on him, and it looked like that might be the right course, but he's kind of slowed down a little bit. I know he had a really good start the other day, but he has leveled off to a 3.66 ERA, 1.10 whip, 19.4 strikeout minus walk. He's been very good, but maybe not quite as good as we had hoped after that early stretch. I know it's hard to be disappointed in what we've seen. Is there any kind of worry about what you've seen with the way he's adjusted to the league, the way they've adjusted to him? Is that a concern going forward, the fact that he, you know, command was not quite as good there? Just overall, what's your evaluation tell you about Jared Jones? Any concerns in the long run?
No, I was very high on Jones coming into the year. He's probably my my draft and hold MVP so far. I will happily buy any kind of a dip on him next year, assuming he kind of just, if he were to finish with a 3.66 ERA, I think I would just be buying him everywhere next year. It's really hard to, I know Skeens is 22, but it's really hard to be this good and to show these stretches of dominance as a 22-year-old starting pitcher in the big leagues. So I think it's just been a massive success for him thus far. And you're not going to be able to kind of cruise through 30 starts with like a 2.2 ERA as a 22-year-old in most cases. So I'm not that concerned by some bumps here in midseason. Now, again, it's eventually he's going to get to a point where he's kind of setting new career highs in terms of workload and stuff like that. And he throws very, very hard, and he's not very big. You know, he's 6'1", 180, 185. So Jones is kind of a prime candidate to eventually need Tommy John surgery at some point. So an injury could always kind of derail things for 2025. But let's say he just kind of finishes the year with like 150 innings, 155 innings, something like that. I'm going to be really excited because this is a guy that's gotten better every year with the command, particularly. Like, his stuff has always been really loud when he was drafted out of high school, and even, you know, 2021, 2022 in the minor leagues. Most people expected him to eventually end up in the bullpen because of his command, but he took a big step forward with that last year. I think having the walk rate he did last year at AAA was actually really impressive given his age and given the automated balls and strike system at AAA, and then to get to the big leagues and have even better command and control than he showed at AAA last year. I think it's just been an awesome debut season so far for Jones.
Oh, he's been amazing. I wish I got in on some of the bidding. I don't have any shares, but I'm hoping I get some for next year. But I wonder, you know, when you mentioned the risk of Tommy John, if you're playing Dynasty, you're looking at a 3-5 year window. Does that make him more of a sell to you with that concern about him being shut down for a year and a half at some point? Or is it still just, even if he has Tommy John, you take out 16 months and he'll be good to go?
It's just, it comes down to the price and kind of to, you know, your league context. Like, I'm in some dynasty leagues where everyone is just constantly hoarding pitching and chasing pitching. And it's just really, really hard to find impact pitching without really paying an arm and a leg for it in trade. So someone would really have to bowl me over because, you know, he is just entering his prime here. And even if he has Tommy John surgery once in the next 5 or 6 years, you're still talking about a guy that's going to be in his low to mid 20s and potentially even improving some of his secondary offerings. So I wouldn't be like aggressively shopping him, but if somebody came trying to aggressively buy him, then I'd consider moving him for that reason. I mean, that's part of like, you definitely want to buy low on these types of guys in Dynasty. Like, the time to add Jared Jones in Dynasty was middle of last season when people like me were pumping him up and that type of thing, and you could get him for not very expensive prices. But you don't want to trade for guys like this right now when they've already established that they're you know, at least an SP2, borderline SP1. So the key is to be adding these guys before they break out, because it's not a good investment to me to trade for these guys at this point in their careers.
That's totally fair. I'll ask you one more thing on the Pirates duo. Is there, because earlier in the season when Jones came up, people were having the Jones versus Skeens conversation. I think it's pretty firmly Skeens at this point, but how big is that gap for them between the two of them?
You know, I think Skeens' size is big. Skeens just kind of, it's, you know, I think Jones, I wouldn't say Jones looks like he's all that high effort, given how hard he throws, but it's so easy with Skeens. You know, I could envision Skeens being like 185 inning a year type of guy, where I think Jones maybe is more like 160 inning a year type of guy. But I think there is a chance that just kind of the way the season's trending and everything, Jones could still be a good buy in drafts next year, whereas Skeens will be at least properly priced and maybe overpriced.
That's totally fair. Yeah. We're having the SP1 conversation in June. There's a good chance he ends up as a first round pick. Main events 2025, Skeens is going in the first round if he's healthy. I think that's a pretty easy one to see coming down the road. Let's talk about Mason Miller. I really hope that he's a starting pitcher again at some point. I'm just obsessed with the guy. The strikeouts are incredible. He had a negative FIP for a while, which I don't even know how the formula works that way. I'm not a big math person, but he's breaking formulas here. He's just been incredible. He has come back down to earth a little bit because he was just so stupidly good, but I don't think there's much doubt about the talent level. I think the only concern here is, can Mason Miller stay healthy, and can he eventually get stretched out back to the point of being a starting pitcher? What do you think about Mason Miller's long-term outlook, James?
Yeah, of all the guys we've talked about, I think Mason Miller is the one I would maybe be most curious about selling high on. He's the one I have the least faith in from a durability standpoint. And I mean, honestly, like I would, if he got traded to like a better team, but was still used as a closer, I might even prefer that if I had him in Dynasty to the team attempting to stretch him back out, because I think you kind of know what you have in him as a reliever. You have arguably the best reliever in baseball. And I think we haven't seen him be able to handle a starter's workload yet in pro ball without getting hurt. So I think that stretching him back out would introduce more risk into the equation than there already is. Obviously the chance of him being, you know, maybe the best starting pitcher in baseball would be alluring to teams, even teams that might trade for him eventually. But I'm really worried about just how long he can avoid another arm procedure. He just throws so hard. He's had such a hard time staying healthy. So I think he's a major durability risk, especially if a team decides to stretch him out. But I think a lot of it would come down to what he wants to do. If Mason Miller's comfortable just trying to be the best reliever in baseball, and that's a fine way for his career to play out in his eyes, I think that's the way I'd probably go as the team. But if he's itching to get back to being a starter, I think I'd probably just let him kind of do that. So I think I'd put it in his court. But yeah, if you could. And I think valuations on him are just going to be very wide ranging, because it's sort of everyone sees how good the stuff is. Everyone can kind of see the durability track record, and that's just up to how each person decides to value that.
I think from his, and I don't know, I haven't heard any quotes from Miller. I don't know him at all, obviously, but as a 25-year-old who's this good, I feel like in his mind, he's got to be hoping to get back in the rotation at some point, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Maybe that's just me being selfish, wanting to see him pitching more. Because this guy, like, if you're used to looking at stuff plus numbers, anybody listening, you know, generally you see stuff that's in the high 90s, low 100s. It's a 164 stuff plus on the slider, 143 on the fastball. It's 151 overall. It's, you look at it and you're like, this is wrong. There's something wrong here, because those numbers, you just don't come across them. It's really just incredible talent level. So I do hope, personally, that we are able to see him get stretched out and have a career as a starting pitcher. I think it would be fine if he's a reliever, but I just want that talent over a larger sample size. I'm being a bit selfish here. Let's talk about Ben Brown, who is currently on the shelf, but we'd seen some pretty nice things from him before he did go down. I think the talent level, again, is just through the roof here. What are your thoughts on Brown going forward? We've seen a 3.58 ERA, 1.08 WHIP. He's over the 20% strikeout minus walk rate threshold. Like I said, he is injured right now, but going forward, what's your evaluation tell you about Ben Brown?
Yeah, he was, of the guys we've discussed so far, he was definitely the guy I was lowest on before the season by a lot. So I've been kind of adjusting sort of where I think he should be valued. He is still a two-pitch pitcher. The command, I think, has been pretty poor at times in the minors. I expected him to eventually end up as a reliever coming into the season. But he did show some flashes, some really impressive flashes as a starter before getting hurt. So I think to me it's kind of a TBD what his eventual role is and how effective he is if it is as a starter. I tend to think he's going to be a fade for me next year, just because of how low I was on him before the season. And then, you know, you got the injury. We'll kind of see where things go from here. But, you know, fastball, curveball, that's not the normal kind of two-pitch mix, although it is a hard curveball. But I do think there's, you know, he's like a stuff plus guy, right? Like Eno and I co-manage a team, and Eno picked him up for the stuff plus, even though I thought he was a reliever. I think a lot of people in our league thought he was a reliever. But, you know, stuff plus is a valuable tool. I don't think it's everything. And I think in some cases it can lead to guys getting overvalued and overdrafted if you lean too much on that tool. So I expect that there's going to be someone in all my leagues next year that likes him more than I do, but I could change my tune if he can kind of stack, you know, trying to figure out when he's going to come back.
I think he's resuming work on the mound today or tomorrow from what I saw.
Yeah, if he could get, you know, 6-8 weeks of being, you know, a decent big league starter, not, you know, he's going to have a bad outing here and there for sure. But I'm more interested in, like, is he consistently going like 5+ innings? Is he consistently keeping the walks to, you know, around like 2 per outing? I could be singing a different tune for sure. I mean, the stuff is good, but not a guy that I came into the year with any faith in as a big league starter.
Yeah, stuff is interesting. I think there are times where it's really useful, like looking at Max Scherzer's first start back. He had an 82 stuff plus, and he's never been below 98 before for a whole season. So you see things like that, and you're like, okay, there might be something to look into here. But yeah, just using it as like a sole thing for your evaluation isn't what I would recommend. Just, you know, use it as a piece. There's so many different pieces of information out there to look at, and that's one of the really good ones. But let's move on to Gavin Stone, who I've actually been a really big fan of this year. I'm just wondering where the strikeouts are. He's been a pretty big strikeout guy in his time in the minor leagues. 19.1 strikeout rate this year with a 12% swinging strike rate. So he's maybe leaving a few Ks on the table. Maybe that should be a little bit higher. Pitching for the Dodgers, he's got 8 wins already. Like, there's a lot going for him. What are your thoughts on Gavin Stone? Are these strikeouts coming, you think?
Yeah, I absolutely love Gavin Stone. I think he's just so dialed in right now, and he's just so comfortable with his plan of attack that he's focused on going deep into games. He's focused on generating weak contact. You know, I think he's, when he gets into some three ball counts, I think he's comfortable, you know, not giving the guy a pitch to drive and just focusing on getting the next guy out. You know, he does have a couple 7K games in his last five. He's got a couple 6K games in there. But he's just going, like, he's gone 6+ innings in 7 of his last 10 starts. And he's got a whip of like 1 over that stretch. I think the Ks will come to some extent over the rest of the season and into next year. But if that leads to him being undervalued in drafts next year, I'm going to be all over him. Just being someone that goes deep into starts and pitches for the Dodgers in itself is just a massive fantasy skill, because it's just going to generate so many wins for you. So I think, you know, I was very high on him coming into the year. If I know a lot of people weren't. And so I think there's going to be some people that are kind of maybe fading him next year because of the strikeout situation. But to me, this is a guy that's just, he's still just kind of scratching the surface of his potential as a big league starter. And I love what I've seen from him over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the price is going to be crazy. There might be the odd person in the league who's going to jump him up because of Dodgers, because of wins. But if the strikeout rate doesn't get up over 20%, I think it, you know, it's projected in the second half to be about 20-21. So maybe we get to that 20% point, but that's not going to be blowing people away. They see a 20% strikeout rate. It's probably going to like a 12, maybe 13% strikeout minus walk. There are going to be people who just kind of undervalue him, but I've been a big fan, and I think if you're still seeing him on some waiver wires, he's like 70% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I think that that's a really nice ad if you're still seeing him out there. Mitchell Parker is somebody where it's just kind of like, what the hell? Who is this guy kind of situation for me? I was watching the game when he first debuted with my dad. We're watching him. I think to myself, this poor bastard, they call him up. He's going to face the Dodgers in his debut. He did well against the Dodgers, against Houston, against Texas, Baltimore, Atlanta, all these great teams. He's been really excellent, a 3.30 ERA. He's got a 1.10 whip. I think he's maybe overperforming to some extent, but hard to not be impressed with Mitchell Parker through his first 13 starts.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's been one of the more pleasant surprises in all of baseball this year, especially among rookies. I think two things were really working against him in terms of his perceived value, I guess, maybe coming into the year. I really wanted absolutely nothing to do with Nationals starting pitchers this year for the most part. Like, you know, even Mackenzie Gore, who I liked a little bit, just was worried about, you know, the defense, the park, the lack of run support, and also the Nationals just don't have really a track record of developing quality homegrown starters in the recent past. But I think that narrative has kind of flipped this year with Parker and Jake Irvin. And then the other thing working against Parker coming into the year was he just walked way too many guys in recent stops in the minors, both at AAA last year. He had a 13% walk rate. He had a 15.5% walk rate over 100 innings at high A in 2022. So just did not showcase starter level control until this year. And that's been huge, obviously. Like, he deserves a lot of credit for improving that aspect of his game significantly. Now, the projection systems aren't going to be buying it in this type of a sample yet. But I, again, like with Jared Jones, that 13% walk rate he had at AAA last year, that was inflated in part due to the automated balls and strikes system there, which they've adjusted a little bit this year. There were just so many walks being issued on higher strikes last year. So I mean, he's obviously got a full starter's pitch mix, Parker does. And I'm interested to sort of see how people treat him. I saw him. He's kind of been, you know, he hasn't been dropped in any the like 15 team high stakes leagues I play in, but I have seen him sort of being treated as a streamer in some of the 12 teamers. So I don't think there's a ton of kind of widespread buy-in as in him yet. And so I'm interested to sort of see what the valuation is in the off season, but obviously, a lot of that will just depend on how he finishes the year. Like, where is that walk rate at the end of the season? Because if he's still rocking like a 5-7% walk rate, I'll be very intrigued for next year, because the slider, curveball, changeup, like it's all kind of there for him. He doesn't throw that hard, but he has the requisite secondary pitches to get by.
I can see why managers and OCs and in 12-team leagues on the NFBC would be more treating him like a streamer. Not the greatest team context. Strikeouts on a given night could be very good. They could be, you know, could be one or two like we've seen a couple times. But overall, I think it's really, really great stuff for Mitchell Parker. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to be talking about more on the prospect side of things, starting with Drew Thorpe right after this.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
We are back. We're joined by James Anderson. Of course, he is the lead prospect analyst and senior baseball editor at RotoWire. James, I think we're in one league together. Are we in an NFBC 50 league together or two? I think there's at least one, right?
Yeah, I noticed that the other day. I saw you in there. I think I joined that one. That was my only NFBC 50 I did this year. I just joined it because I recognized like half the people in the league. I think maybe you or Chris Clegg was like sort of trying to get people to fill it up on Twitter. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, I know a bunch of these people. So I hopped in there. But yeah, I think that might be the only one.
Yeah. I'm just, I remember just going through our DMs and you messaged me cause I took Nola in that draft and it was kind of fun that those slow drafts, you're in third, I'm in fifth in that league. Clegg is in sixth. So we're all kind of grouped together. Will Garofalo is actually number one in that league right now. He's got a very good team with a shot at the overall. So always fun getting to play in leagues with different people that we actually know, which is when I first joined the NFBC, I was thinking, am I just going to be playing with a bunch of random people? And am I even going to know these guys? But most of the leagues I'm in, almost all of them, I know at least one or two people. So that's been a fun part of it as well. Let's talk about some of the more prospect-y names. We talked about some of these rookies. These guys, a couple of them have debuted as well, but let's start off with Drew Thorpe, who maybe he wishes he hadn't debuted yet based on the way that things went for him. He was walking more batters than he struck out through his very small sample of three games, but it wasn't really great for him. I don't think this is a situation where you got to be that worried. I think when you see this kind of thing in Dynasty, it's typically a buy. What is your thought process on Drew Thorpe here? Are we going to see this command settle down a little bit? We've seen 4 and 5 walks respectively in the last two games, but he was always a pretty good command guy in the minors. So what are you attributing that to? Is it just some nerves, the usual rookie stuff?
Yeah, well, that start at Arizona is really kind of clouding his numbers so far. He gave up 7 earned runs, walked 5, and 3 1/3 in that one. And I thought the other two, I mean, 4 walks against Detroit is a little much, but I think the other two at Seattle, at Detroit, kind of exceeded my expectations. So I think it's kind of TBD on him. Everyone kind of knows the book on Thorpe. Ridiculous changeup. As you said, always known for pounding the zone in the minors. And then really fringe fastball velocity. And so if he's, you know, when you have that type of velocity, what's he like averaging 91 probably on the fastball, something like that. I want to double check that so I get it right. He's
averaging 90.8 on Fangraphs. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're only throwing that hard, and you're righty, you really got to be locating. I didn't watch the start, but that at Detroit start, where he walked 4, he might have just been like, look, when I'm behind in the count, the last thing I'm going to do here is try to throw my fastball for a strike to get back into it because someone's going to tag it. So I could see him just nibbling a little too much there, and that's where the walks came from in that outing. But, he's gotta throw strikes. I'd love to see – you know, he's not so young that he can't add a tick or two to that fastball. I'd love to see him maybe try to do that in the offseason. I'm sure he's tried it in the past, so maybe this just is what it is. But you know, the changeup's great. The command should be better than it is. But like, you know, Gavin Stone had a really rough surface stats last year. And he was a changeup first guy, and a righty, but you know, Gavin Stone at his worst was sort of like 93 with the fastball. And this year Stone's been more like 94, 95, but it's, I don't know. I think I'd be interested in Thorpe next year if he's just, if his surface stats are just ugly at the end of the season and most people are just staying away and he's dirt cheap, because I do think there's no reason why he wouldn't be in that rotation pretty much all season, unless he's even worse than I'm envisioning. But if he's able to kind of show enough flashes where there's some buzz, I probably wouldn't go there, just because, you know, you I don't even feel comfortable playing the matchups with a guy like that, the way he's currently operating, because like any team, if you're throwing them 90, 91 and getting too much of the plate, any team can beat you up. So not a guy I'm super high on here in the short term, but if the stats are bad at the end of the season, I might be interested, if just because I think the price will be so low.
Yeah, I think this year it's probably not going to go terribly well pitching for a team that's maybe going to have 40 some odd wins. I don't know how many of those are going to go to Thorpe. Strikeout upside for right now doesn't seem like it's that high. So I do think there are some limitations on him in the short term for sure. But yeah, looking towards the future, if people want to fade him simply because of like he's a White Sox pitcher, I or because of whatever the struggles, White Sox strikeouts, whatever it is, there probably will be some kind of buying opportunity next year. If he doesn't really drastically turn things around, and it doesn't look like that's immediately coming here, like you said, I don't really think that we're going to see, you know, 8 innings and 10 strikeouts from him his next time out. I think we'd all be pretty shocked if that happens. Christian Scott, I don't know why he's not pitching in the major leagues at this point. I spent a lot of fab money on him, and I'd very much like to see him pitching, because I spent like 30% of my budget in a couple leagues. I was holding on to him. And he did very well, but I don't know when the Mets are going to bring him back up. Do you have any insight on when we might see him again and what we'll see when he does come back up, if he does come back up at this point? Because I think he will, but the Mets are very frustrating.
Yeah, I absolutely love Scott. I went around 30% on him in a main event league as well. So I feel your pain there. I think we had a report up on RotoWire today that he could rejoin the rotation before the All-Star break, just because they don't have an off day here for a while. So on our projected starters grid over at RotoWire, which you can go out 28 days on that projected starters grid if you're interested, we have him plugged in to start a week from today at Washington. So that'd be nice, and hopefully we would get kind of confirmation on that before lineups lock on Monday. But I just love Scott. I think he's someone I expect to have on a bunch of teams next year if he finishes the season healthy. I think he cuts kind of a similar mold to like peak Shane Bieber, like Aaron Nola, those types of guys that just throw a bunch of strikes. He's got really good stuff. His stuff has gotten better. He used to be kind of low 90s with the fastball, got up to kind of mid 90s. So I see sort of sneaky SP1 upside if he's able to handle a full starter's workload. I think he was a converted reliever from college, so I think that's still kind of TBD, but love the home park with the Mets. I know it's just been a disaster, like for the Mets, just in terms of expectations, payroll, all that stuff this year. But I really think that they're headed in a good direction under David Stearns. I know it's really frustrating that Scott hasn't been up, but, you know, I understand why they want to sort of see what they have in guys like David Peterson, Tyler McGill, the guy that everyone sort of assumed Scott might bounce from that rotation, Jose Quintana's had his best two starts of the season, I think the last two starts. So, Sean Manaea is not the most durable guy. So I think one way or another, Scott might be up for good this next time. But even if he's not, like, I love him for next year. I just don't really see any flaw with him as long as he gets back up into the rotation and projects to break camp next year.
I agree with you completely. I think, honestly, if if things remain roughly the way they are, he doesn't come up and get absolutely blown apart or anything, he might be my favorite target on this list heading into next season, based on the skill, based on the fact that I don't think he's going to get pushed up too high in drafts. I think this is going to be somebody that I have a lot of shares of going into next year. Let's talk about Hurston Waldrop, who also did not have the greatest debut to his major league career. A couple of starts that did not go terribly well for him. I don't think with anybody you see this kind of thing, I don't really think it turns you off of them in the long run. But what are your thoughts right now on Waldrop? It was pretty ugly stuff against a couple of fairly softball opponents to start his career, but I'm interested in what you have to say.
Yeah, he's just it was kind of the worst version of Hurston Waldrop that we saw at the big league level. Strike throwing is just the make or break skill with him. From just a pure stuff standpoint, he should have been maybe the second pitcher taken in last year's draft behind Paul Skeens, but he, even in college, couldn't really string together long stretches of starter level command. He peaked at the right time his final year at Florida, was really dominant down the stretch. Obviously the splitter is just an absolutely ridiculous pitch for him. And I think, he's kind of like, you just want to handle him very carefully. If you're Atlanta, you want to just work with him on that command. He might not be ready for it this year as a starter. And there's still a chance that he ends up being a high leverage reliever if he can't improve the command and control. We'll see kind of where the elbow injury goes, right elbow inflammation for him. Wouldn't be surprised if that just went in the wrong direction. But, if he's able to, even if he doesn't have success at the big league level this year, if he's just able to get healthy and maybe kind of get back into a groove in the upper minors, I might be backing on him for next year, just because I assume the price will be quite low given what he did on paper at the big league level. But, I mean, this is an extremely volatile pitcher who could, like, he could go out his next big league start, he could strike out 10, or he could walk 5 and not get through 2 innings. Like, I think both of those are on the table for him. So not a finished product by any means.
Yeah, I mean, he was just picked last year. A year ago today, he wasn't even drafted yet. And I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, and you focus a hell of a lot more on prospects than I do. Our team is maybe rushing these guys a little bit too much in recent years. We've seen the Angels call guys up, like, immediately after the draft type of deal. In your opinion, is it better to just let them develop over a couple years in the minors before, bringing them up to the show?
That's a really good question. I think part of it is just kind of a supply and demand issue. Like, these teams, and like kind of like a peek behind the curtain, like at RotoWire, we do like 1,200 player outlooks during the off season, and there's just been probably like a dozen, maybe more than that, pitchers pitching in big league rotations that we didn't even write an outlook for during the winter. But teams just, everyone's hurt and someone needs to pitch, right? So I don't think Atlanta was like, oh, this is so exciting, we're so pumped to have Hurston Waldrop up in the rotation, we think he's going to hit the ground running. I don't think it was necessarily that. I think it was just kind of like, let's see what he's got. Let's see how it looks. We sort of know what our other options are. They're not that exciting. And I mean, they went to Spencer Schwellenbach first, and Schwellenbach, what did he make, 2 starts at AA before they went to him? Like, so it's just, I think these teams are just running out of healthy rotation options. And so I think there are certain cases where it's kind of obvious. Like, I think the Pirates were even too conservative when Skeens debuted. I think he should have been up after 3 or 4 minor league starts instead of 7. We've seen it with just the phenoms of the past. Those guys can handle coming up in short order and sliding right into the rotation. But I think a lot of these teams would like to give their pitchers more time in the minors, and they're just kind of forced into finding someone to start on whatever day they have a hole in the rotation. But there also is something to be said, I think, for, you don't want to overdo it with these guys in the minors, especially when they're hard throwers, because you do kind of assume that Tommy John surgery will come for a lot of these guys sooner than later. So better to get those bullets up in the big league level if you think the guy's ready. But I think a lot of it is just teams are kind of forced to find someone to start when they're dealing with four or five starters on the IL.
Yeah, only so many teams can sign Johnny Cueto off the waiver wire and put him into their rotation every year. I forget who said it to me recently. I think it maybe was Welsh or maybe it was Eric on that show we did last week. But AA is the new AAA in terms of you're a call away once you get to AA. You don't need to necessarily put in the reps at AAA before you're going to be called up. I think George Kirby was also one that pops up who just skipped AAA altogether. And that one worked out pretty well.
The Mariners have been doing that. The Mariners just don't even send their best pitchers to AAA. Like Bryce Miller did that. I think Brian Wu did too. A lot of these teams don't want their pitching prospects pitching in the Pacific Coast League. There's also just it's different types of players at AA and AAA. Like at AA, it's pretty much all kind of real prospects, maybe more toolsy players at AA than at AAA. And at AAA, you just have your kind of, you know, guy who is sort of your seventh or eighth starter on the depth chart who throws 92 and doesn't really have any plus pitches. You have your 27-year-old like first base DH types hanging around AAA with who kind of get by more on strength and bat speed. It's kind of different types of players at those two levels. So there's nothing wrong with going from AA to the big leagues in terms of promoting a pitcher, especially, you know, if you're a team like Seattle that's very comfortable and has done that in the past.
Seems to have worked out pretty well for these guys with five aces in the rotation. It's looking pretty damn good for them. I know that Park helps out to some extent, but you could probably take those five names, throw them at the wall in any order, and get a pretty viable rotation, however it came out. It's pretty ridiculous. Let's talk about Max Meyer, a rotation that at one point was kind of ridiculous in Miami. That's now, like, somebody posted the roster resource screenshot the other day. It's like Rodri Munoz, Yonny Chirinos. It's pretty bad stuff based on all the injuries they have. I'm wondering why Max Meyer, you know, similarly to Christian Scott, why the hell is he not pitching at the big league level just yet? Do you have any answers on that one? I have no idea, because when he was pitching before, it was three starts. He looked great, albeit maybe not the same strikeouts we're hoping for, but it's hard to complain with a 2.12 ERA through his three starts. Got sent down for a quote-unquote short period of time, which has now been a couple months. So what are your thoughts here on Meyer? Do we see him in the big league soon?
Yeah, I think so. We've even got him on our projected starters grid lined up for pitching this Thursday at Philly. Wow. But, I mean, it might have just been a case of us not knowing who else to put there because, right, like you said, they just don't have big league starters. So the Marlins are a horribly run team. They have been for a while, and they just had a disgusting farm system, despite the fact that they haven't had any good years at the big league level. So they should have a much better farm system than they have. So, I mean, there's probably some mismanagement going on there. You know, with Meyer, like, he's been fine at AAA. I don't think he's been as good as people might hope. You know, he's got he struck out seven batters on May 31st, but eight or nine strikeouts in 11 innings since then. And he hasn't gone five innings in any of his minor league starts while going five plus innings in his three big league starts. So it's not even like he's really learning to turn a lineup over necessarily down there. So I don't really know what they're doing. It's tough because he probably doesn't even have a ton of innings left this season. And then obviously you're going to be struggling to get wins if he does get back into that big league rotation. So I understand stashing him in deeper leagues just because there aren't many pitchers out there worth stashing right now, but I don't think he's a priority stash for me.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I didn't realize, but yeah, in AAA in his 10 starts, it's a 6.23 ERA. It's pretty rough stuff. I don't think he's anywhere close. And if you look at below the surface, then, you know, the XFIP and whatnot are a lot lower. But he hasn't exactly gone down there and dazzled, and maybe that's why they haven't brought him back up. I just don't know why they're rolling out with these. You know, they look like random generated players in MLB The Show or something that they're sending out there every fifth day. It's kind of tough. Let's talk about Jackson Jobe. We're going to talk about a couple more prospects here before I let James go. Jackson Jobe, I think he's pretty damn good, with the caveat that I'm not somebody who watches a lot of minor league baseball. But if you just look at the Fangraphs pages, they're pretty damn impressive. He went up to double A this year. Walk rate has gone up to some extent, but I think that's kind of just me quibbling here. What are your thoughts on Jobe? I think he's a top 10 overall prospect by MLB Major League Baseball, but what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, he's awesome. I had him behind Paul Skeens and Christian Scott as my third ranked pitching prospect on the last update. Now Christian Scott might not graduate before my next update, but Paul Skeens will. And Jobe is just, you know, the only thing that can really go wrong with him, like in terms of realistic outcomes, is just health. He's got everything you could want from a frontline starter in terms of stuff, in terms of command. He's athletic. It's kind of the total package, except for the fact that he's a 21-year-old with very little experience above high A. But if he can just, and I would not read too much into that walk rate at double A. I think that's probably just a small sample issue. Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that has plus command in the big leagues. Could be a SP1 as early as like next summer. Just needs to stay healthy. So cross our fingers. I think he might be done with his rehab assignment. Not 100% sure on that, but he should be back at double A here, either for his next start or the start after that. And then, like we've talked about, he's the type of guy where if he can really string together 3-4 starts of kind of showcasing the command that we saw last year, he could be an option in the big leagues. But they might also just try to get a prospect promotion incentive draft pick with him and make sure he retains his rookie eligibility heading into next year. I assume the plan is for him to be a big part of their 2025 rotation. So that could make sense too. But, you know, if they were to get kind of back into playoff contention, he could be a weapon for them over the final couple months. But either way, as long as he's healthy, I'll be interested for next year.
What do you think the most realistic thing is? He makes a couple September starts. Is that kind of what seems most likely? That feels maybe right. You know, middle September, they start him 2-3 times. He doesn't surpass any innings limits or prospect eligibility. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, we always used to have to worry about teams keeping guys down until like mid-April to get the seventh year control. The new thing is now keeping guys down until late August so that they don't exhaust their prospect eligibility heading into the next year. So really any time from like late August on would make sense for him to be up. I think he could, you know, he was in the Arizona Fall League last year. I'm sure he doesn't really want to go back there again, but that would maybe make sense just given the time he's missed. Because I would like to see him get, you know, his workload is just not built up right now. So I'd like to see him get as many innings in 2024 as possible, just so that he can go a little bit deeper next year.
I'll selfishly say I wouldn't mind if he ends up going to the AFL so I can get a couple of live looks at him in November. Let's head to my neck of the woods and talk about a Blue Jays prospect who I really just don't even know how to feel about anymore. It's Ricky Tiedemann. So maybe less than a year ago, I saw Keith Law. He did a spot on Toronto radio, and he was saying, I think that long-term Tiedemann is a reliever, and I kind of, you know, shit my pants a little bit, to be honest with you. And then I was talking to Chris Welsh, and he was doing some live looks, and he was saying that there was some problem with the way that a couple of his pitches differentiated from each other. I believe it was the fastball changeup. They came out of the hand looking very different from it. It was very easy for hitters to tell what pitch was coming from Tiedemann there for a while. Now, I'm not sure if that's something he's fixed, but we're also talking about somebody who has kind of an extensive injury history for somebody who's only 21 years old. Any problems long-term with Tiedemann if you're in a dynasty league holding him? Is he somebody you'd be looking to get off of just based on the name value? As a Jays fan, I'm kind of concerned that maybe it's just because of the way we fumble every pitching prospect around here, but any concern about his long-term outlook for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would have wanted to get off him a while ago. It's really all about the injuries to me and the durability. I just think sometimes pitchers deal with so much at such a young age from a elbow, shoulder, all that stuff standpoint that it kind of just changes who they are. You know, there's a long list of guys that have been as highly touted as Ricky Tiedemann or even more highly touted who just didn't amount to anything because of injuries. And I think that could be where this is headed. So is he a starter or a reliever? Like, I think he's got the stuff to start. I don't think he's shown that he can handle a starter's workload. So probably more likely that he's a reliever at this point. Very tough prospect for me to rank. I'm usually lower on these guys. Like I was really low on like Daniel Espino relative to a lot of people when he was starting to show these types of warning signs. It's just, you don't want to be looking for reasons to believe in a pitching prospect who's always injured, right? Like they need to show you reasons why you should believe in them. Like you don't want to try to come up with ideas in your head. There's just so many good pitching prospects out there. They pop up all the time. So I have very, very low hopes for Tiedemann this year. I thought he was one of the most overdrafted guys in draft champions this past winter because of the name value.
Well, that doesn't make me feel great about it as a Blue Jay fan, but that's kind of just par for the course this season. Nothing goes right for us. The Arelva suspension, all the hits we've taken all around the board. I'll quickly get your thoughts on Arelva, I guess. I know we're doing pitching today, but this is kind of a new thing, the Arelva Martinez suspension. Does that really change your long-term outlook for him?
Yeah, I mean, it's not great. Like, you know, I just really wanted to see how the bat looked against big league pitching because he's someone that I thought was really underrated this past offseason because I don't think people realized kind of the improvements he made with his hit tool from 2022 to 2023. The power in there has just always been kind of insane. So the steroid thing, I mean, he's always had plus power. Like, I don't think like steroids were like making him or anything like that. You know, maybe he was doing it to try to stay on the field through something, or maybe it's just making bad decisions. I mean, obviously he did make a bad decision, but I wouldn't rule out Arelva Martinez once he's served that suspension, still ending up making it as an everyday third baseman with 30 homer power. But it does introduce, you know, another thing for us to consider with him, but beyond just the surface stats and the under the hood stats. Like we don't necessarily know what the steroids were doing for him, but I would try to be patient in dynasty leagues with Arelvis, and I do still think he could end up being a good fantasy third baseman in a year or two.
Let's hope so. There's not much else we got going on for us at this point. A couple more pitchers here. Cade Horton, who went up to AAA five starts ago, hasn't been great. The strikeouts are still there, but walks are pretty high. He has a 750 ERA. The estimators are not great either. I don't want to read too much into the ERAs and the xFIPs and all that in the minor leagues, but 750 does kind of jump out at you, even from kind of a small sample size. Is this anything to really look at here? Is it anything to be worried about?
Well, I think there's stuff to be worried about with Horton. And he was someone that I really was high on coming into the year. I thought what Cade Horton did in 2023 was really, really impressive. And the stuff was outstanding. But the stuff was down this year. The fastball was down like 2 miles an hour on average. And then he ended up on the IL with a shoulder strain. And so I'm just worried because this is a guy that he's never been able to build up his workload. He had Tommy John surgery in college, and he's always just had this ridiculous slider and upper 90s fastball until this year. It was a mid 90s fastball. And so, you know, there's just a ton of risk here now because he, like, I don't like being super patient with pitchers when the stuff is trending down and there's an injury. Like, I just think there's prospects to be patient with, but injured pitchers with declining stuff are not the type of prospects to be patient with, in my opinion. So, you know, maybe he can get healthy enough to, you know, maybe pitch out of the big league bullpen in September or something like that. Maybe he goes to the Arizona Fall League. But the Cade Horton we saw in 2023 was not the Cade Horton we saw this year. And it might have been a bit of a red flag that, because I thought it was very confusing that they didn't give him an invite to big league spring training in the spring, and then they assigned him to Double A, which, you know, I think based on what he showed in 2023, he should have probably gone to Triple A. But I think clearly they saw that the stuff wasn't as good as it was in 2023, and now he's hurt. So, you know, I would not be buying low on Cade Horton in dynasty leagues.
Wow, that's tricky. That's a tricky one. A lot of the hype. I see him high on a lot of prospect lists. But James, you don't seem to be too optimistic about what we're going to see going forward here. Andrew Painter is an interesting one. We haven't seen him at all this season. We didn't see him at all last season either. Or maybe did we see him at all last year in the minors? I don't think so, actually. I think it's been since 2022 is the last time we really saw him out there, putting up just ridiculous numbers in terms of strikeout minus walk, in terms of everything. Where do you stand on him now? 21 years old. Not sure if we're going to see him later this year. I think there's been some chatter that maybe we see him later on in the season. But where do you stand on him now that we haven't, you know, gotten much out of him the last couple of years?
Well, the frustrating thing last year was that this elbow injury popped up March 10th. March 10th is when he got officially diagnosed with a sprained UCL. And then he didn't get Tommy John surgery until late July. So basically 4 months after the injury is when he got the Tommy John surgery, as he tried to kind of rest and rehab it. So that's why it's costing him two full seasons, is because he just wasn't getting the surgery right when it happened. All that said, I think like Tommy John surgery is just kind of a rite of passage for a lot of the game's best pitchers. They just kind of get it, you know, in their early 20s, and then that's that for, you know, hopefully they can go another 6-7 years before they have to get it again. Maybe they can go the rest of their careers without getting it again. And Andrew Painter was just such a elite starting pitching prospect at the time of his injury that I'm pretty interested for 2025. He could also be an Arizona Fall League guy, potentially. You know, maybe the Phillies wouldn't want to do that. They might want to just have complete control over his throwing program and stuff like that. And works his way back. But, you know, there's always a chance that, you know, Tommy John surgery, it doesn't have 100% success rate. But we do sometimes see guys come back even stronger, throwing even harder because of all of the stuff they've done in their rehab. And so I'm very excited to see what Painter looks like next year. And hopefully he can make a full recovery.
I guess based on when he had it, there's no chance we see him down the stretch this year. Is it going to be cutting a little too close?
I mean, I don't know if I would say no chance, just given the Phillies, the fact that they're, you know, they're constantly trying to win World Series. And, you know, who know, I don't know what he's looked like. I don't know. You know, they're not going to just not have him go with a throwing program. So, I mean, there's a chance that he looks ready. It looks like a possibility for the postseason. I mean, there Wyatt Langford almost made his debut during last postseason. Wouldn't be the craziest thing for Andrew Painter to do that this year, but I think it's highly unlikely and certainly not in a fantasy viable role.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There were two names that you wanted to discuss here that you added to the outline. Noah Schultz being the first one. He's putting up some absolutely absurd numbers this season in high A and in double A. The guy doesn't remember how to walk anybody. He has a 0.46 walk per nine, 1.4 walk percentage. The strikeouts are massive. Everything looks pretty damn good for him. If there's anything that maybe works against him, it's that he's in the White Sox organization, but there's going to be opportunities. Like, that's not a team that is looking like they're like Crochet might be shipped out. Fetty might be shipped out. There's going to be opportunities, it looks like, for him. Any chance we see him this year, or is that maybe pushing it a little bit too much for Noah Schultz?
Again, I wouldn't rule it out. I think I more wanted to bring him up to kind of put him on people's radars for 2025. I think he's a lot like Jackson Jobe in terms of the upside and the skills. He's a lefty, unlike Jobe, and he's also 6'9". But he's like, this is a premium pitching prospect, Noah Schultz. He's the type of guy who could be an ace. I think he's going to spend almost all of next year in the big leagues, assuming he doesn't get injured this year. But he did deal with injuries in 2023, and so he's actually already logged a career high innings without getting to 50 innings yet this season. So just an absolutely, you know, electric talent from the left side. He's got one of the best sliders in all the pro ball, really, and just a fastball that gets on hitters in a hurry. So there's a lot to like here. If Noah Schultz can just finish the season healthy, even if he doesn't get up to the big leagues, I think he is a strong draft and hold target, at least early in the season. In the draft season, I should say.
I'm already looking forward to, like, who am I going to pick in the 700s of D season December? Probably have a problem when you're thinking about those kind of things in June. But there's one other guy you wanted to mention as well. I'm going to probably butcher his name. Is it Robleski? Justin, yeah. Robleski? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think you did a good job.
I butcher names at the best of times here. But, I mean, pretty old prospect in the Dodgers system. He's about to be 24. Putting up some pretty good numbers. You think we're going to see him get a shot this year?
He could be up this year. I think he's been one of the more exciting risers among pitching prospects for me so far this season. The age that, you know, that's jumps out at you, rightfully so. But he's got big time stuff. And he throws from the left side and he's in the Dodgers org. So, like, he just checks kind of all the boxes, honestly. And the ERA 5.4 in one start at AAA, but it's the PCL. So I wouldn't read a ton into Robleski's ERA and WHIP specifically at AAA. I mean, if they're awesome, then I'd read into that, because it's really hard to put up a good rate stats in that league. But he throws really hard. He's good at generating weak contact. He's a lefty. He's definitely a starter to me. I don't think he's a reliever. So you add that all together and put him in the Dodgers rotation next year for like 20 starts. It's pretty exciting.
I think the Dodgers are in a kind of a weird situation in terms of pitching. I don't know if Kershaw is going to be there next year. Maybe he is. Ohtani's going to be back into the mix, but I can't imagine Paxton is still there. There's going to be some revolving doors there probably. So there's a good chance, if he's able to keep up what we've seen this year, that Robleski is able to get a shot for sure. But James, we went through 17 names. It was great catching up with you, man. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Of course, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I think the first time I met you was at First Pitch Arizona in November of 2022. And then you weren't there last year, right? Are we going to see you this year down in the Fall League?
Yes. I'll be there. I haven't booked anything yet, but I got the okay from my wife to miss Halloween. So, very excited to catch up with everyone again this year at First Pitch Arizona.
That'll be great. It's always a blast. Check out baseballhq.com. You guys should be coming down there. If you're listening, you hear me talk about it once a week anyway. come down there and check it out. James, before I let you go, just remind everybody what you got going on and where they can keep up with your work.
Yeah, rotowire.com. We've just got so many valuable tools, whether it's dynasty stuff, prospect stuff, redraft stuff. Definitely recommend checking out the site. You can follow me on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. And yeah, just really focused on draft content right now. Going to have that top 400 prospect rankings fully updated as soon as I can after the draft. And got some really good draft-related podcast guests coming up on the Wednesday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. So definitely check that all out.
James is doing fantastic work on the written side, on the audio side. Always great stuff coming out at RotoWire. That podcast feed is one of my favorites there is, because you hear different voices every day. One day it's you, one day it's Jeff, one day it's Todd, and it's just a nice mix of different great voices in the industry. So follow James over on Twitter, at RealJRAnderson. I am at JoeOrico99, and make sure you guys are subscribing, downloading, rate and review, all that stuff to help us out here, as we're still a relatively new show, so any of that support would be greatly appreciated. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'll be breaking down Tuesday slate for you guys, but until then, everybody take care. Have a great night.